This is the Maternity Matters podcast from Riley Children's Health. Discussions to help you along the journey from the first trimester to your child's first year. Hey everyone, Gabby Gonzalez-Breith-Miller here from Riley Children's Health. We know there are so many questions that come up on this journey into becoming a parent, so we hope we can provide some guidance, make you feel more comfortable and prepared. Our first two guests are members of the labor and delivery unit, so they're going to be just really getting into those details of what happens when you finally arrive at the hospital to deliver your little one. So let's dive right in. Well, thank you both for being with us today, Sarah and Kelly. I want the listeners to get a feel for what you guys do with laboring moms. So why don't you each kind of explain what your role is and how long you've been in that position? Kelly, why don't we start with you?
Okay, great. Yeah, my name is Kelly Marvel. I've been here at IU Health Methodist Hospital Labor and Delivery for 10 years now. I started back with as a unit secretary, worked my way through nursing school, up the ranks, bedside, charge nurse, and so on. And now I've found myself into the clinical manager role, and I've been in this position for about 2.5 years now. So this is my home, the only place I've worked at in a hospital, and I truly love it.
Great. And Sarah, how about you?
So my name is Sarah Vodder, and I started at IU Health Methodist back in September of 1998 as a new grad right out of nursing school. And I've been part-time, weekends only, for the last almost 16 of those years.
What is your favorite thing about working in labor and delivery? You both have a lot of experience in this area. So Kelly, do you have some words on that? What your favorite thing is about working in that unit?
There are so many things to love about this job, especially being downtown in an academic health center. We see so many different walks of life. And so some of our patients, we are all they have. I think that's probably the most gratifying and brings purpose to our position, is just coming alongside our moms and just humbly providing that care and that compassion to them through sometimes the most exciting part of their lives, but also sometimes it could be one of the toughest times of their life. And just being their partner through that is, it's like nothing that you ever experience.
Yeah, that's amazing. And Sarah, what about you?
I think it's amazing to see women realize what their bodies are capable of, and seeing moms bring new life into the world after waiting for 9 months to see what their baby looks like. It's just, I still get teary, especially when the dads cry. that makes me tear up for sure. And I also love just the great teamwork that we have on our unit as well. It's not just one nurse at the bedside helping these parents. There's at least two. And it's just a great experience for us as nurses. We love what we do. We love helping these parents. And like Kelly said, we see the best of the best, and we see just, you know, absolute devastation as well. And so it is very humbling to be that person for these women.
Well, I'm sure that the work that you each do means so much to those moms, to those families that come through the unit. And so today we're going to be talking all about what labor and delivery is actually like. I know a lot of moms, as they prepare for that big moment, are wondering, you know, what's going to happen once I get to the hospital? How does all of that unfold? So why don't we start off with the basics, right? If a mom is at home and she's thinking, uh-oh, is it go time? What are those signs that she may be in labor?
Yeah, so I tell my patients, if they come into triage and they end up getting sent home because it isn't the real thing, what we want them to look for are contractions that are painful. You can't walk through them, can't talk through them. They are increasing in discomfort, not decreasing at all, at least every 5 minutes for an hour to two. Just kind of give it some time to make sure that you're moving in the right direction, or if your water breaks. So that could be a big gush and then continue leaking, or for some moms, it's just leaking. But the key is that it's fluid that keeps coming. So if those kind of things are happening, it might be time to head to the hospital.
Yeah, absolutely. Just what Sarah says, you know, if those contractions seem to not be going away, maybe getting a little stronger and they're showing up as a pattern, you know, maybe every 5 minutes and then maybe decreasing. And also, you know, the telltale signs, you know, any kind of vaginal bleeding or severe pain, sometimes, you know, contraction pain might not all be in the belly and feel the same. Sometimes our moms feel it in their backs. But anything that feels different, not right, and not going away, like Sarah mentioned, I would go ahead and call your provider, and have them let you know what to do.
Yeah, definitely good advice right there. And what do those contractions feel like? Perhaps a first-time mom might be wondering, are these the real thing? Is it Braxton Hicks? Is there a way to know the difference when you're toward the end of your pregnancy?
Well, really, the only way to tell if it's really a labor contraction versus Braxton Hicks is cervical change. And so the main way to tell that is by getting checked by your provider. So unfortunately, there are some very painful Braxton Hicks contractions that don't change your cervix. So if a mom comes in for a labor check into triage and you know, their cervix is just a, you know, 1 or 2 centimeters, but they're obviously contracting, we may keep them for a couple of hours and recheck just to see if those contractions are causing the cervix to change, because that would be labor contractions. And like Kelly was saying, they may not be just contractions you feel in your belly. They may be contractions you feel in your back. So if your belly is getting hard and you're feeling that discomfort, like a really intense menstrual cramp down low in your belly or wrapping around your back, that's what a contraction feels like.
Okay. And let's say the couple, the mom, the caregiver that's with the parent arrive at the hospital. What happens at that point once they make their way to labor and delivery to get checked out? What's that process like?
So they'll check in at our OB triage and give a little bit of information to our unit secretary to get them registered. And then a nurse will take them into our rapid assessment room and we'll get just a brief history. We'll check the baby's heartbeat, check some vital signs, get their blood pressure, and just kind of get a general idea of what's going on. And from that point, we would get them into a triage bed and put monitors on their bellies. So we'd monitor the baby's heartbeat continuously, and a contraction monitor would also go on their belly to monitor frequency and duration of contractions, and go through the admission process, just again getting a little bit of history on what's been happening, how long it's been going on, any concerns they have, and what we call the provider at that point to come in and evaluate them.
And of course, we're living in strange times right now with the pandemic. Are we COVID testing moms when they come in? Does the support person also have to go through that? Can you explain a little bit of that, Kelly, if you want to take this one?
Oh, sure. Yes. So we do the pre-screening questions for anybody that presents to be seen. So any signs or symptoms of the COVID, that, or if they've been tested recently or have been quarantined for any reason. And so if the answer no to all of those, we still do testing for all of our admissions. Of course, our patients have the right to refuse. I mean, everybody does. We would just document that refusal. But most of our patients do get tested. It's not as bad as one might think. And I feel like most of us have all been tested by now anyway. But so those results usually come back within 24 hours, which is nice now. So if the test does come back positive, we do have some things in place just to protect mom, baby, and support person, plus our team members. And those are just the isolation requirements. You know, we do the enhanced droplet isolation, so gown, gloves, and eye protection. And now that we have more research and knowledge of COVID, we have lightened our restrictions within the delivery room. So a support person can stay in the room, of course, and the baby can stay in the room as long as everything's okay with babe. And we just have, you know, we just educate the parents on safe handling. You know, if mom wants to breastfeed, she can still breastfeed. We just ask, you know, just wash your hands, wear your mask, and that kind of thing. So we're with the parents the whole way, with education and support, if we do have a COVID positive mom.
I'm sure that's a big relief to people listening, because there's a lot of, you know, curiosity about how that will work in the hospital. So that's great to hear. And once those parents are in the room, you know, they're checked in, admitted to the hospital, what happens from there? I'm sure it can look very different for each mom, but what's the typical process like once they're settled into that room? Sarah?
So typically once we get mom and her support person into the room, we discuss what progression in labor may look like and what to expect at delivery and during the recovery process. So we talk through how often they may be checked. So we try to minimize exams, especially if mom's water is broken, just that that bag of water acts as a barrier of protection from infection. And so even though we use sterile gloves, and, you know, we are always extra careful, there's always a chance, you know, that could introduce some bacteria that could lead to infection. So we try to minimize those exams. I'd say most providers check about every 4 hours, unless, you know, mom appears very active and is getting ready to deliver. Obviously, we make some changes at that point. But we talk about pain management and what mom's plan for that is. If she's planning to go unmedicated, we have options for her that are, you know, pain management options that would include things like walking around the room, showering, using hydrotherapy if she meets requirements for that, birthing balls, peanut balls, lots of different options to keep her up and moving. Some moms are wanting an epidural, so we talk about that. A lot of times they ask, well, how many centimeters dilated do I have to be to get an epidural? And for most providers, there's not really a magic number they're looking for. They're just wanting to see that mom's progressing in labor. So if she presents an obvious act of labor, you know, 5-6 centimeters or beyond, most of the time they're fine with them going ahead and just getting an epidural if that's what they want. If they're a little bit earlier, some moms just want maybe something to take the edge off before they're ready for the epidural. And so we have IV pain medicine options we can provide. And those medications don't take away all the pain like an epidural would. They kind of dull the pain. The contractions seem shorter, less intense. Mom tends to care a little bit less that she's having a contraction, and it makes her drowsy, so she's able to rest in between. And the IV medicine usually lasts for an hour to two, so it's not a long term, but a lot of times bridges the gap between where she is and then getting an epidural a little bit farther down the road. And of course, the epidural is a more comprehensive pain coverage. So we tell moms it's a labor epidural. So when it comes time to deliver, sometimes that coverage is a little bit different. So the anesthesia doctor would come in and talk with the patient, get their consent for the procedure, tell them all the risks, all the benefits. And once the epidural is in place, usually pain relief starts coming within the first 5-10 minutes. They're able to tell the contractions are getting less intense. And then after about 20 minutes or so, they're pretty good and comfortable. And our goal is for them to not feel nothing. We want them to be able to still tell that they're having a contraction, a little bit of sensation. They're able to move themselves in the bed. Of course, they're not getting up and walking around anymore, but just being able to stay mobile and move around in the bed a little bit and have some sensation that when it's time to push, they're able to still have some pressure and have some sensation that helps guide them when it's time to start pushing.
Yeah, and I want to just touch on my own labor experience because I did opt for an epidural, and what I didn't know is that I could still use the peanut ball. You know, my nurses were very helpful with that. So even if you do get an epidural, there are ways to help mom move around a little bit. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yes, peanut balls are one of our favorite tools to help mom get in position, to help bring the baby down, lower through the pelvis, just turning from side to side and using the peanut ball in different ways definitely helps the labor to continue to progress. Some moms are worried that if they get an epidural that it may slow things down. And what I always tell moms is, if an epidural was your plan and you're this uncomfortable, just get the epidural and let's see what happens. If, you know, you're not changing your cervix, there are ways, you know, we can help your contractions pick back up. But if an epidural is what you want, then let's get you an epidural. And for some moms, getting an epidural actually helps them relax, helps their contractions be more effective, and they continue to progress absolutely just fine.
And then, of course, once the pain is managed in some way, whether through some natural methods or an epidural, sometimes moms are thinking, am I going to be able to eat, you know, if they've got a long labor? What is that like? Kelly, if you want to jump in here on this one, what are the restrictions when it comes to what can be ingested during labor for moms?
Sure. So the thinking of you can't eat in labor, that's kind of gone to the wayside, especially with our natural laboring patients. So, or early labor even. So it, depending on the provider, but most of our providers will allow patients to eat and drink throughout their labor. And really it's important to get that calorie intake because, you know, you have a big job ahead of you. So we want you to be nourished and especially hydrated. So I think drinking fluids is probably the most important thing you can do while laboring. But yes, we allow you to eat. Now, if we are doing an induction of labor where there's medications on board, so early medications being either Cytotec or Cervidil are the two that we most commonly use, we do want to see how baby tolerates that before we allow you to grab something to eat. So we might have you wait half an hour to an hour, see how baby tolerates. If everything looks good, then yeah, the provider will usually let you go ahead and have some food. Now if we move on to the Pitocin, so Pitocin is what brings on those stronger contractions. We do move to more of a clear liquid diet. So just, you know, ice chips mainly, I think is what our patients usually try to munch on, maybe some sips of water. And same with our epidurals. So once you get an epidural, just we want to make sure the baby tolerates. And at that point, you know, we would probably move to more of a clear liquid. Like I said, ice chips, maybe on the rear, like popsicles, sometimes they're okay. And again, just staying hydrated. Along with those, you know, you would have IV fluids going as well.
And then as moms are progressing, nurses are coming in, doing those checks as needed, which you guys mentioned. But what are nurses checking for? If a mom has never been through this before, what are those three things that you guys are kind of measuring when you come in to do those cervical checks?
The thing most people are familiar with is dilation. So the cervix opening, the cervix starts closed or 0 centimeters and progresses to 10 centimeters or completely dilated. But there's also a component of your cervix thinning out or effacing, and then station. So that would be the baby's head in relation to points in your pelvis. So the cervix starts out closed and thick like a tunnel. And as the baby comes lower into the pelvis and helps the cervix to open and thin out, for first-time moms, it's really important for the effacement to happen before they can dilate. Usually, you know, we see moms get to 2-3 centimeters, and then their cervix starts to thin out to, you know, 90, 80, 90, 100% before they can really continue to dilate more. So, and then of course the station. So as the baby's head comes lower, you know, we may check them and they need, the baby's head might be minus two and then progresses to minus one to zero, plus one, plus two as the labor progresses as well. And then once you've had a baby before, the dilation and effacement kind of all takes place at the same time. So it's not as important to see that early effacement. They may be 4 or 5 centimeters and 50% effaced. And as the labor progresses, all of that kind of continues on together.
And then of course comes the big moment of it's time to push. So for a mom that reaches that stage of labor, what is that like? What guidance is provided? And what can that support person be doing if they want to be involved in all of that?
I think it's important to have that conversation and educating, especially for first-time moms, what to expect when we get there. So we hope to have those conversations before we get there. So once we're ready to start pushing, it just kind of depends, you know, if we have natural laboring mom, this can be different positions on the bed. There's many ways we just tell our moms to listen to their bodies, and then we support where they need to go and what they need to do. We educate them with taking that deep breath in and bearing down pressure with each contraction to really make use of those contractions while pushing. The support person can be right there at the bedside, you know, either holding the leg if that's what we're doing or supporting the mom in different positions. So yeah, we all hands are on deck, especially using that support person to coach and hold and maneuver, sips of water in between, that kind of thing. Yeah, I don't know, Sarah, if you want to add anything with our, you know, moms who might be on IV pain medicine or epidurals, same thing, you know, especially with the working epidurals, those labor epidurals. I mean, I've delivered patients still on their hands and knees, even with the epidurals. So it can be done. It just kind of depends on the patient. In the situation. But as long as baby's tolerating what we're doing and we're making progress with moving baby down, we'll keep doing it.
But it really depends on each patient and their comfort level. Some moms with epidurals are scared to move too much. They don't want their epidural to come out, or they just aren't able to support themselves very well. But some moms have really great mobility. And like Kelly said, we can get them in different positions, get them on hands and knees, side to side. We have squat bars, things like that. And unmedicated moms, like Kelly said, we just really encourage them to push in whatever position feels most effective, feels most comfortable for them.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, you know, we haven't really talked about the tubs. We do offer water births. Here at Methodist, we have 4 tubs. When we move to Riley, we will have 3. So we still continue to plan on offering hydrotherapy and or birthing and delivering in the tubs. And that, you know, of course, depends on the provider preference and, of course, the patients. But that's another option for delivery as well. And so that throws a couple of different techniques and practices, especially for nurses, to make sure we keep everybody safe. But it is something that we offer.
Yeah, good to get that information out there that even in that hospital environment, you can have a water delivery or things like that. Very cool. And after all of that work, then comes, of course, you know, bonding with the baby and what's sometimes referred to as the golden hour. Can you guys tell me a little bit about what happens in those moments after the delivery and when the family is still able to stay in that room and just get to know their baby a little bit?
Once the baby's born, if baby comes out crying and vigorous and just how we would expect, babe goes right up onto mom's chest. And we initiate skin to skin for at least the first hour, or if mom is nursing, through that first breastfeeding session. And so that's just really important time for bonding. Skin to skin helps the baby to stay warm, regulate breathing, heart rate, all of those things. And it's just really good bonding time, lactation support. And even dad or support person can do skin to skin with the baby as well. And so we just really encourage keeping the baby there, like I said, for that first hour at least. And after that initial hour has passed, a lot of parents are eager to see how much the baby weighs. And so We have a baby warmer that's just a few feet away from mom's bed. And so we'll just take the baby over there briefly for a head to toe assessment. So we just get the baby a thorough check over. We'll do, we'll measure the baby's length, measure the baby's head, get the baby's weight, and we'll do footprints. And if the parents have consented, we give newborns three medications here at Methodist: erythromycin eye ointment, vitamin K, and a hepatitis B vaccine. So all those things would be taken care of over at the warmer. Or if mom desires, we can even do those medications while baby is skin to skin. And then the baby's over in the warmer maybe for 5-10 minutes, and then we get the baby right back over to mom and dad.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on right there, but it's so nice that parents get to have that bonding time in the room with their baby. And so I want to thank you both for taking the time to explain this whole process. Hopefully this helps guide moms who are preparing to deliver their babies soon. So thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.